just put up with those symptoms for quite a while. Eventually went to the doctors and said, look, something's not quite right. I'm achier than I think I should be. So we ran some blood tests and said, oh, these aren't quite right. Let's run them again. Ran them again. Sent me to an endocrinologist, and the endocrinologist focused in on my thyroid and said my thyroid wasn't functioning properly. Started me on a course of levothyroxine, which just made me feel worse. So I was going back to hospital saying, I feel worse than I've ever felt. I now have brain fog. My libido is now non-existent and my energy is on the floor. And the doctor's reply was, your bloods are fine. You must be okay. I was going, no, you're not listening to me. Like, I know my body better than you do. I've lived with it all my life. I feel worse than I've ever felt. And he said, it's in your head, Ross. There's nothing wrong with you. Your bloods are fine. Now, by this point, my symptoms were a lot, lot worse. And actually, I drove home from work one day and the brain fog was so bad, I gave myself a little mental test. And I was driving the car home from work and I thought, try and name as many objects in the car as you can. And I couldn't even tell you what the steering wheel was called. My brain was so foggy, I just couldn't get any words out. I knew what it was. I was safe driving the car, but I just couldn't articulate any thoughts. And I got home and I said to my wife, this can't carry on. Like, I know something is wrong with me and it doesn't matter. You know, we've got to get to the bottom. And she said, it doesn't matter what it costs. Let's just explore options. And that led me down the private route. So I gave up on the NHS, got onto Google, as you do, found a men's health doctor down in London, Dr. Willis, who is now our chief medical advisor. He was a fantastic man. I went to see him. He said, what's wrong, Ross? I said, it's a long story, Dr. Willis. And I still remember what he said. He said, Ross, you've paid for an hour. You can talk for an hour if you want. I did. I spoke for 55 minutes about how I felt like an antique toy robot. I just wanted someone to put the key back in the back and wind me up. And at the end, he said, it's obvious. Your testosterone's low. I said, how can it be obvious? Because I've seen three endocrinologists and a GP in the NHS. And that was the first time he explained that the NHS and the private sector see the hormone system or the endocrine system different in the UK. In the private sector, we follow the British Society of Sexual Medicine's guidelines, which is closer to how it's treated in America, whereas the NHS have very different guidelines. So that's where that whole difference comes from. I said, well, can we prove it? He said, yeah, we'll run some blood tests. Lo and behold, my testosterone was very low for a 35-year-old, as I was then. Started me on TRT. Within weeks, I went back to feeling my age. And then we tweaked my diet, because your diet, your lifestyle choices are incredibly closely related to this. And all of a sudden, I went to feeling younger than I was. So I was sort of 35. I felt about 80. You know, within sort of the 6-month time period, I was feeling 18 again. And I was running up and down the stairs. I was no longer craving chocolate and sugary drinks because I had my own natural levels of energy back again. So that's kind of how it all started, really, a decade ago.
Wow. And you actually run your own company now, don't you? It's Alphagenics, which is about is about the male hormone replacement and stuff. So yeah. You're now doing what that doctor did for you for other people.
Yeah, exactly. So for 9 years, I was successfully treated by a couple of doctors. Dr. Willis retired, then saw another couple of doctors. And for 9 years, I was treated. I always felt like the doctor support was good. However, I felt a little bit like a number. I felt a bit like the wraparound service wasn't there. And I also realized about 18 months ago that this was a bigger problem. Like, at the time, I kind of buried my head in the sand a little bit. I was embarrassed to talk about it. You know, I wasn't man enough to even have enough of my own testosterone. So I didn't even really talk about it with my wife. She just knew that I was on TRT. Obviously she knew because she was with me at the beginning, but it was, yeah, it was quite emasculating really to have to admit to other people that I needed help to be a man, which is in my head how it sounded. So after that period though, I started to think, well, if I'm not talking about this, how many other men are out there also feeling this way that have nowhere to turn? So when I combined that sort of thought with the fact that I knew in my mind the service that I thought should be out there didn't exist, we created Alphagenics. We beta tested it back in 2021, officially launched it last January. And we've created a community where men can openly share. And it's incredible.
How brilliant is that? Have you any grasp of how big this, I don't know what to call it, a problem, but how big this issue is?
Well, we think at least 40% of men over 45 years of age are experiencing symptoms of andropause. That could be way more because, of course, we tend not to tell anyone.
Of course.
The main difference between the female menopause and the male menopause is how it presents. The female menopause, as you know, is quite an abrupt change in hormones. Therefore, the changes within a lady's body tends to be quite obvious. In men, it's a very slow decline over many years. So from the age of 30, you lose 1% to 2% of your production testosterone per year. So by the time you reach your 40s and you're having all the same symptoms as your partner, your wife or partner might get treatment on the NHS, but the GP tells you you're just getting old. And because it's happened in such a slow way, the men slowly get used to it until they do just think they're getting on.
Yeah, it's really funny because when I spoke to my husband about it, and I said, you know, this, what will you talk about it, Al? And he went, I can't remember. And that's probably because of what you just said. It's just this slow sort of gradual. Yeah, wow. So can you tell us a little bit more about the signs and symptoms? I mean, we know what the main ones are, which is a loss of libido, erectile dysfunction, but there's a lot more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the common ones we see are low mood, low energy, brain fog, weight gain, loss of muscle mass, slower recovery in the gym, poor sleep, emotional volatility. So you can be low 1 minute and feel like crying, but then you can feel quite frustrated and even angry the next minute. Erectile dysfunction you mentioned as well, which is a whole other area, obviously very closely related to hormone replacement, but again, something that most men don't talk about. It's fascinating in its own right. About 15% of erectile problems come from a hormone deficiency. The vast majority of it come from changes within the circulatory system linked to another disease, diabetes being a big one, plaque formation in the arteries being another, although interestingly, optimizing your testosterone reduces plaque formation in the arterial system, lessening your chance of cardiac event. And what is super interesting is we've known for about 40 years that ED, erectile dysfunction, is a precursor to a heart attack. So about 7 years after a man experiences erectile problems, they will likely have a cardiac event. And we've known that for a very long time.
Us mere mortals, if I can just put it bluntly, we don't know any of this, you know, unless you're working in the field. This is when, obviously, I've spoken to you, so I know a little bit more, but I was like so shocked at the extent of what can happen. And it comes back to the fact that I suppose it's the NHS private thing, but also the fact that men don't talk about it. And when I said to you, yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? Isn't it, Ross? Men just don't talk. They just don't open up. You know, they need to open up. We've got to get them to talk. And you went, right there, didn't you? And I went, what? And you said, tell me what you said.
We've got to be really careful because, yeah, the media and everyone is saying men need to be vulnerable. Men need to open up. And it would solve all the problems. But actually, it could open up far more problems than we're prepared to actually accept right now, because it depends who they open up to. If that man opens up to their boss, but their boss isn't ready to shoulder that responsibility, maybe they get sacked. If they open up to their friends, but their friends aren't ready, they haven't done the work, they're not ready to shoulder that responsibility, they're ridiculed. That could have both of those scenarios, of course, affect mental health. Maybe suicides go up. And the example we see all the time of men that open up to their wives and their partners, but their wife or partner isn't ready to shoulder that responsibility. They married them because they were the strong one. And the wife leaves them. What does that do to the man's mental health? So yes, we can say at a very high level, men need to be vulnerable and open up. And in a lot of situations, that's super helpful, but it isn't that easy. But that is one of the things we're trying to do, you know, and we're creating this community where men can talk. Great example recently was a man whose marriage was about to break down, all because of his erectile problems. He hadn't told his wife he had erectile dysfunction. He just distanced himself to the point because he was so embarrassed. She now thinks he's having an affair because they no longer sleep together. And he can't tell her now because it's gone on for so long. And they might well divorce if they don't do something about it quite soon. So this is just one example of the things we see day in, day out, where men don't talk because they haven't got the right person to open up to.
Oh, my goodness. So help and treatment then, Ross. You've got to help us out here now. We're obviously just absorbing all of that information. And what help is out there and what treatment is out there that's available?
Yeah, so probably the best place to start is, you know, what do we look for? And actually, we look for the biochemistry, and that dictates what help is out there. So in the UK, we measure testosterone in nanomoles per litre. A normal is anywhere from 8 to 30 on that scale, regardless of whether you're 18 or 80. Somewhere in there is considered normal. Optimal, however, is above 20. That's where men feel youthful, vibrant, energetic, making quick cognitive decisions. They're recovering swiftly after the gym, holding lean muscle, keeping off belly fat, and that where our libido is working, erections are strong. So that's where we want to be. Now, about 20% of the men we test are already over 20. So we say, look, this isn't your issue. And we help them uncover some of the other problems that might be causing symptoms. Iron deficiency, vitamin B12, mental health problems, poor fitness, and any number of other symptoms, of course, can cause lethargy or aches and pains. If someone is between, say, 14 and 20 on that scale, what we say to them is, your testosterone is not optimal. And although we are a business, Alphagenics, we're an ethical one. And actually, you can probably get that up to an optimal range inexpensively and naturally, because hormones are very much dependent on four factors: the quality of your sleep, the quality of the food that you put into your body, the quality of the exercise that you do, and your mental health. So how stressed are you? How is your body responding in the daily environment? So in that middle group, we talked to them about those things. We talked to them about things like blue light blockers, which can help improve sleep, because sleep is where we create our testosterone in the testes at night. We talked to them about xenoestrogens. So there's a lot of hormone disruptors in our diet. Plastic bottles are a bad one. There's a lot of toxins in there which leach out into the plastic, actually attach themselves to the body and convert testosterone to estrogen. So I drink all of my water out of a copper container, or if maybe glass or ceramic rather than plastic. There's inexpensive supplements as well that can be really helpful: zinc, magnesium, Tonka Ali, Ashwagandha. There's about 8 we recommend. And these can be purchased, you know, £10-15 on Amazon, and yet can make a big difference. In fact, they've been shown in research to raise testosterone about 26 to 30%. So someone's 15 on that level, and we make these lifestyle changes, add in the supplements, they can get over 20 without the need for TRT, because TRT, as it isn't readily available on NHS, is quite a big decision if someone goes down that route. And it's not an insignificant investment. It's something that you're generally going to do for the rest of your life.
Wow. So how, right, so go to where TRT is concerned, if somebody go, how quickly can you get to TRT going down the NHS route? You can't, can you, or can't you?
So if you are below 8 on the NHS, they might consider you for TRT. In our experience, at 5, 6, 7, the GP will probably say, well, try and improve your diet, get a bit more exercise, come back in 6 months. If they go down much lower than that, they will often be given a tester gel, which you rub into your wrist or behind the knee. And the problem is with the gels is it's very easy to be rubbed off. So if you go in the shower, you wash it off. If you go in the gym, you sweat it out. If you touch your wife or your children, you can contaminate them because it takes a long time to rub in. Put a jumper on, you wipe it off. So you tend to find you still get these peaks and troughs, good days and bad days. Whereas injectables get around that issue, but they're harder to get on the NHS. And the other big issue with the NHS and their protocol is, remember, they think 8 is okay. They think 8 is normal. So if you go and see them at, you're at 5 and you're treated with TRT, as soon as you're above 8, they go, congratulations, you're fine. But 20 is optimal. So you can be having TRT on the NHS and still feel ghastly because you're still not in an optimal range.
Good grief. It's quite scary, really, isn't it?
It's an interesting subject. That's for sure. I mean, the research going into hormone optimization and the research going into longevity medicine are sort of colliding. You know, and we know that optimizing our hormones for both males and females can help to improve, you know, health and well-being in great many ways. So testosterone, for instance, in men and women, reduce plaque formation, as I mentioned, which lessens the chance of a cardiac event. It also likely protects you against Alzheimer's. It increases bone density, lessening the chance of a break as you get older. And of course, breaks as we get older are actually a high cause of mortality, particularly in the hip. It increases your muscle mass, which protects the skeletal system and lessens your chance to get aches and pains linked to osteoarthritis. It increases insulin sensitivity, which drives down your chances of getting type 2 diabetes, which has all sorts of effects on the body. So it's cardioprotective. It's incredible. Once you optimize your hormones, you just feel better in every way.
Amazing. So it's only you talking about the two areas colliding, but the male female thing is colliding, isn't it? Because we both, male and female, both actually need the same in different doses, or however you're going to call it. We both need the same thing, because I saw that on LinkedIn you put something on about estrogen this morning. And then do you want to just tell us briefly about that?
Yeah, so we both need all of the sex hormones. We just need them in different amounts. So men have about 10 times more testosterone than women. And obviously we create it in a different way. Men create our testosterone in our testes. You obviously can't do that. So you create yours in a different fashion, but it's still just as necessary. And estrogen is the same. Estrogen is protective as well for a man, at the right level. So too high levels of estrogen cause exactly the same symptoms as low testosterone. But really interestingly, low estrogen also causes the same symptoms as low testosterone. So it's about finding this balance. And the big thing, if we go back to sort of lifestyle choices again, and how TRT isn't magic, you've got to be eating right, sleeping right, you know, making good choices. Estrogen is metabolized in the liver. So if you're drinking a lot of alcohol, it affects how you metabolize estrogen, which has a massive effect on your mood, libido, and erectile function. So one of the things we do talk about a lot with our clients is how much alcohol are they drinking? And particularly after COVID, you know, a lot of people got into bad habits, drinking too much, working from home. And we're seeing, you know, a sharp increase, I think, with erectile problems because of that.
Great. Wow. Right. So there was an awful lot of information there. Has anybody got any questions? I mean, while we've got him, because he is a mine of information, has anybody got any questions they want to ask Ross? I mean, it's a safe environment here. Ask away. Got Helen? Go.
Hi. Thanks for that. It's really interesting. And obviously, we've all got men in our lives if we haven't got male clients. How can we pursue more knowledge in this area, Ross? Are you going to be running some trainings or are you offering your services as a practitioner?
So we do run blood tests for people if they are feeling that they might be low. We screen everyone for two reasons. One, we don't want people to waste their money. So you've got to have at least three symptoms of testosterone deficiency before we would recommend having a test. But also testosterone is abused. You know, and a lot of people, their experience of testosterone is, oh, it's just for big guys down the gym. It is a controlled substance. So we are always very careful to screen people that they want it for the right reasons. But I mean, if they just, you know, reach out, we're happy to chat to anyone if they've got any questions. You'll find a lot of information on our website, alphagenics.co.uk. Follow me on LinkedIn. We're putting posts out, you know, 3-4 times a week, videos as well, talking about sort of key areas that can help a man's life. And as you said, we all have men in our life. One thing to look out for in particular is if a man starts to withdraw, ask in a gentle way if there's anything that you can help with, because it's so hard for a man to open up if he is having erectile problems or he feels emasculated because his energy is on the floor. It feels like he can't provide, he can't be the rock for the family, because whether you hold him in that position or not, he likely has assumed that position. So do ask, you know, if he says he's got a headache more than once or twice, if you're trying to get amorous, then, you know, say in a safe, you know, safe way, is everything okay? You know, everything okay downstairs? Do we need to talk about anything? Make him know that it's perfectly fine. Over 45% of 45-year-olds will experience ED at some point in their life. And often it's very, very easy to fix. Tadalafil, for instance, which is it's similar to Viagra, 20 milligrams is prescribed for performance enhancement. 5 milligrams a day is cardioprotective again, because it opens the blood vessels. And actually, most men over 40 should be taking a 12-week course once a year. That's the most current research regarding Tadalafil. It's super safe. Ladies can take it as well. Even pregnant ladies can take it. It's such a safe medication. And it is incredibly powerful. It works to increase blood flow, and mainly to the penis, which brings back nighttime erections. So if anyone has got a husband and they notice whether this is happening less on a nighttime, that's a really important time during a man's life. The reason being is nighttime erections happen 4 to 5 times a night, or they do when we're younger, and it has an important function. It's because the penis is not a muscle, it's a type of squamous tissue, like a sponge. So on a nighttime, when it fills and empties, it's like us going to the gym. It's like lifting weights. It keeps that tissue healthy. As we get older and our blood vessels can become occluded, that will happen less. It's really important to know, for a man to notice that, because it's like not going to the gym as much. So then, of course, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. If it becomes ED, then it can affect mental health, it can affect families, it can affect relationships, and can have huge issues. So notice it early, and a 12-week course of Tadalafil will bring that right back, because it's like going to the gym. It brings back that nighttime erection, which is generally really good for a man's mental health, because it makes us feel young and youthful again. I can't say that'll be a good thing for you guys. Maybe perhaps you'll get chased around the bedroom, but really, really powerful. But like I say, for that to happen, and once a year, 12-week course, in 5 to 10 years time, I strongly suspect that most GPs will be recommending that to their over 40-year-olds.
And you said that was safe for women as well?
It is indeed, yeah.
Why would we take it?
Cardioprotective. So it increases the arterial flow in the smaller arteries within the body. And any sort of cardiac issue will generally start in the small blood vessels within the body. If it's not picked up early enough, it progresses and progresses and progresses until it gets to the larger blood vessels where it can cause a cardiac problem. So this is a preventative way to increase the blood flow well before it becomes a problem.
That's amazing. Amazing. Gosh. Any other questions for Ross? I mean, this is just like having having the Encyclopedia Britannica sitting in front of me. Wow. I'm sure we'll all have questions afterwards. Oh, I wish I'd have asked him this, and I wish I would have asked him that. But we know, if you want to field any questions to me, obviously I can get them to Ross, or you can follow him on LinkedIn, and he does actually post a lot of really good stuff on there. So has anybody got any burning questions before I let him go?
Ross, I'll just ask a quick question, if that's all right. Your customer base or your community, do you think you're getting people from all walks of life, or is it a certain profile of male, i.e. potentially overweight or haven't looked after themselves throughout their 20s, 30s? Or is it a total mixture of people?
Good question. There's kind of this sort of three main people that come to us, really. One is someone like I was at the beginning. They don't know what's wrong with them. They just know something's not right. They're unhealthy, overweight, achy. They've been through the NHS system, who've kind of largely ignored them, and they stumble across this and they kind of have high hopes that it might fix them. So that's the first person. Second person is, generally they are overweight, belly fat, which happens more in midlife in us men, has an enzyme called aromatase in it. And aromatase converts any testosterone you do have into estrogen. So it becomes this vicious cycle where then your mood goes down, your energy goes down, your libido gets less. So you make worse dietary decisions, you do less exercise, therefore you don't sleep as well, therefore you don't produce as much testosterone. This horrible downward spiral. The second sort of person that we come across are people like probably I have morphed into over the years, and I would say it's the sort of biohacker in the world, the people who are going for Wim Hof sessions and cold immersion, and they're doing yoga and meditation, and they're eating right and doing the right exercise, red light therapy, hyperbaric chambers, you know, all of these things to try and hack or improve our health, even by 1 or 2%. They've generally come across the longevity benefits of HRT, usually through podcasts from people like Joe Rogan, Tony Robbins, Dorian Yates, even people like that. And the third group are gentlemen who have previously self-medicated. And this is a much, much bigger group than I ever thought existed. When I thought we might have the odd person when we started, but actually this is a real big problem. And it's a growing problem, I think, because there's so much pressure. Like, we're very used to talking about the pressure on young women to look a certain way because of social media. But actually, there's so much pressure on men now to look a certain way because of Love Island and social media, where men are all, you know, with rippling muscles and six packs. So we're seeing men who are 18 taking testosterone to look a certain way, and it is ruining their bodies. It's ruining their endocrine system. So they're coming to us saying, hypothetically, if I knew someone that had been taking testosterone from someone down the gym, could you help us? Well, hypothetically, yes, we could. And we run their bloods, and their hormones are all over the place because it hasn't been medically supervised. Someone said, oh, if you want to get big, inject that. A If you don't want your erections to suffer, take one of these. If you find you're getting a bit spotty, take a bit of that. You know, if you need more energy, then inject that as well. And they call it stacking. So they'll have these stacks of medication, which they then cycle. So we'll do it for 12 weeks or 16 weeks. And whereas with TRT, this is a very long answer, sorry, by the way. With TRT, we're just putting back in what's supposed to be there. So we're optimizing rather than taking you into a super physiological range, which means you do it forever because we're just keeping you in the perfect range rather than doing these blasts of a big cycle where you feel like Rambo, but then you come down and feel awful. Then you go back up again. We just want you to feel great all the time.
Wow. Thank you, Ross. Right. Wow. Well, I'm sure everybody's been pretty much blown away by that. Thank you so very much, Ross. Amazing. And I hope we can get you back another time to talk a little bit more, if you don't mind, because I'm sure once the word gets out about this, we'll have even more people who want to listen. For everybody else, the next Zoom chat, the next one, I think it's going to be in May because we've got a live event in April, and it's going to be with Derek Lockie, who is a he was in the police force, and for the last 12 years was, before he retired, was a trained hostage and suicide prevention officer. So he's going to talk to us about the power of active listening in building trust. So you know, something different from a different perspective again. I think it's going to be really, again, really, really interesting chat. So I hope you can join us then. But in the meantime, thank you again, Ross. Thank you all for coming along today. I really do appreciate your support with this. And have a great rest of the day.
Thanks
so much.
Thanks. Bye.